on this New Year's Day, as we gather as community of faith, I invite you to come in to this place of peace and let its silence heal your spirit. Come into this place of memory and let its history warm your soul. Come into this place of prophecy and prayer and let its vision change your heart. As we enter the new year, change of heart, transformation of heart, opening of spirit, that is our focus for this time of year. Welcome, welcome. It is good to be together. Now's the time for the bell ceremony, which is a really beautiful ceremony. And are there any extra bells back there? Okay, if you don't have a bell and you want to participate, just raise your hand and you'll probably get one while I'm explaining. I'm going to begin the ceremony with a reading, a wonderful reading for the new year. And after the reading, we're going to enter into a few minutes of silence, punctuated by the bells. This is your instruction. When we enter the silence, on your third breath, ring the bell once. On your third breath, ring the bell once. So we'll just be having a symphony of ongoing bells. And it's very, very beautiful. So it is to welcome in the new year with beauty and with opening of the heart. So first the reading. This reading is by one of my favorite poets, E.E. Cummings. It's called 53. May my heart always be open to little birds who are the secrets of living. Whatever they sing is better than to know. And if men should not hear them, men are old. May my mind stroll about hungry and fearless and thirsty and supple. For even if it's Sunday, may I be wrong. For whenever men are right, they are not young. And may myself do nothing usefully and love yourself so more than truly. There's never been quite such a fool who could fail pulling all the sky over him with one smile. Happy New Year. Now we're going to go into a time of bell meditation. So on your third breath, ring your bell, and Helene and I will let you know when it's over. Thank you.
Thank you.
My friends, there's never been quite such a fool who could fail pulling all the sky over him with one smile. May that smile be yours. May we all be fools for smiles and small birds singing. May this be one of our lessons as we enter the new year. Well, there's many ways to celebrate the new year. A time of awakenings, a time of parties. Sometimes it's taken a little seriously, though, with New Year's resolutions. I got to do this and I got to do that. Well, that's not what we're going to be talking about today. We're not talking about the work of resolutions. We're talking about the joy of awakenings, the joy of beginning anew, the amazing opportunity to take a look and make some changes and begin anew. Why do we do this? Why do we take a look and begin anew? Because it's the most important thing we can do in the new year. The most important thing is about healing relations, healing relationships. There are very few of us who don't have a little bit of brokenness somewhere here or there in some of our relationships. And this is a time when we can contemplate that, and we're going to be talking about that. I'm going to open with two readings. The first by Unitarian Universalist minister Gordon McKeeman. He writes, "Hell is in fact a burning issue, for it is the issue of separation. Whether we can, with safety and impunity, set up little islands in the human experience and therefore protect ourselves against any relationship with the mainland. And universalism says unequivocally it cannot be done." And now a reading by Thich Nhat Hanh called Interrelationship. He writes, "You are me and I am you. Isn't it obvious that we inter are? You cultivate the flower in yourself so that I will be beautiful. I transform my garbage so that you will not have to suffer. I support you, you support me. I am in this world to offer peace. I am in this world to offer peace. You are in this world to bring joy." Those are pretty nice mission statements for human beings. Pretty clear and pretty simple. And I like them as plans for the new year. Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist Zen master who is founder of the Order of Interbeing, lives peace. He is a model of peace. During the war, he was sent into exile as his monasteries were burned, and many of his young, vibrant, beautiful monks were murdered. Thich Nhat Hanh chose peace in his heart because he knew what the universalists know, that it is not possible to set yourself on a separate island, to live with the toxicity of hatred and blame and righteousness. And so Thich Nhat Hanh's teachings are very worthwhile in studying because he has walked the walk like few others have. The basic message, my friends, is we are one. All interactions are significant. Every interaction we share with another human being is significant. Thich Nhat Hanh calls this interbeing. Interbeing, we are one with everything. Everything and everyone. I also want to remind you of these words about human interaction. They come from A Course in Miracles. There it is written, when you meet anyone, remember it is a holy encounter. As you see him, you will see yourself. As you think of her, you will think of yourself. Never forget this, for in her you will find yourself or lose yourself. We are defined by how we relate to one another. That's the whole deal. That's how we know ourselves. Great opportunity if we take this to heart. We inter-are, we are one. There is no separation. First, we have to change our hearts if we're really going to grasp this, so that we might resolve all differences. If you're a human being, you've got some differences with some people. Thich Nhat Hanh is a human being also. He wrote a book entitled Anger, not because it was something he didn't know about. He wrote a book called Anger because it was something he had to deal with. He didn't just suffer all those losses with a light heart. He learned how to transform the pain and the anger into interbeing. So, how do we connect? How do we make those connections that count? There are a whole lot of paths, and they have several things in common. Their goal is transformation of the heart. In common, they have the necessity for an honest self-reflection, a look at our own behavior so that we really see our part in things, a certain open-mindedness and compassion towards our fellows is also a part of transformation of the heart. These lead to truth-telling and forgiveness. Thich Nhat Hanh has a special element that he brings into it, which I'll talk about later, and this is an expression of appreciation for the other. That's a very important part of his process of beginning anew. He writes this about beginning anew. When another person makes you suffer, it is because he suffers deeply within himself, and his suffering is spilling over. He does not need punishment or judgment. He needs help. That's the message that he is sending. That's true of others, and that's true of ourselves. So, as Thich Nhat Hanh sees it, when we're practicing beginning anew, transforming our hearts, the first step, and I love what he calls this, the first step is flower watering. Flower watering. And what that means is, when you're having difficulty with somebody, you take a bit of time and you contemplate aspects of their behavior and their lives that you admire and appreciate. And you spend some time in that contemplation, and you pick three of the most fragrant and beautiful blossoms, and you share that information with the person that you're having a difficulty with as you seek to transform that relationship, as you seek to transform your heart, as you seek to get off your island of separation. Well, one of my best friends happens to be a Buddhist teacher down here in South County, and she's a teacher of the Order of Interbeing. And as all good friends, things haven't been perfect all the time. So I've had the opportunity to do some beginning anew with my friend Joanne. And that flower watering aspect is such a heart-softening experience, because it prepares the soil for looking at yourself and sharing more. The second phase of beginning anew after flower watering is called beneficial regret. Now, doesn't that sound like an oxymoron? Beneficial regret? I thought so until I experienced it. But beneficial regret is the deep looking at yourself, the deep self-reflection that points out your part in the difficulty. It takes a lot of humility and intentionality to do this, but it is so beneficial. So the regret that you share with your friend or your coworker or your colleague or your family member with whom you're having some difficulty, it is so beneficial when it's shared, because there is a humility and an openness and an acceptance of our humanity that comes forth. It means being humble. It means some feel losing face a bit. It means saying, I am sorry. These things are hard to do, but they are the connective tissue of human relationships. And that's something that is so important to learn as we begin the new year. It's crucial that we look at our relationships and know that they can be transformed if we are willing to transform our hearts. There are many, many different paths to do this. Oh my goodness, turned the wrong page. Okay. The Jewish season of Yom Kippur is a time of atonement when much self-reflection is done and forgiveness requested. I had lost his name. I'm so sorry. Let us listen to these words adapted from the Yom Kippur writings of Rabbi Jack Reamer. Now is the time for turning, And for us, turning does not come easily. It takes an act of will for us to make a turn. It means admitting that we have been wrong, and this is never easy. It means losing faith. It means saying, I am sorry. But unless we turn, we will be trapped forever in yesterday's ways. The rabbi prays, God, help us to turn from callousness to sensitivity, from hostility to love, from envy to contentment, from fear to faith. Turn us around, O God, bring us back to you, and turn us towards one another. For in isolation, there is no life. Friends, it seems to me that our lesson in this new year is expressed in that plea. And turn us towards each other, for in isolation, there is no life. I see this turning towards each other as the very purpose of Yom Kippur, as the very purpose of beginning anew. This turning is a personal transformation, and it is the atonement itself. It is the same as beginning anew. Rabbi Michael Lerner, the editor of Tikkun magazine, puts it this way. At Yom Kippur, Jews around the world will meet to assess how close we have come to actualizing our potential as partners with the holy, and to discern in what ways we have missed the mark. We are not stuck in our negative patterns. We are not stuck where we are, but can fundamentally change ourselves and our world. Tikkun means to repair the world. To repair the world. So that mission statement is getting pretty big. The transformation of the heart is about the transformation of the world. It's about repairing the world. On Yom Kippur, we realize that it is a wonderful blessing to be able to participate in the transformation of the world by transforming ourselves. There are many, many experiences around the globe that we've heard of. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, the miracles that took place there, personal stories of victims of violence who have chosen, I know around this country, to form organizations in which to befriend the perpetrator of the violence so that there will not be hatred, so that their hearts are transformed because they know the toxicity of being on the separate island. Friends, I invite you on this day to think of how your heart can be transformed, lightened, so that you can fully celebrate the new year. It is a freedom. It is a lightening. It is beginning anew. It is awakening. It's not a resolution and a must and a chore. It's a possibility for great things that can make all the difference in the world, one heart at a time. If there is a relationship that needs some transforming, look to it. When I'm counseling people who may be near the end of life, one question I ask is if there is any work left undone. Are there any bridges that you want to be sure are steady and complete? Let us each do that in this time of New Year.
transforming the world one heart at a time. Blessed be. Amen.